This is Dave Gloatz. Welcome to another in my series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky, who writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and who's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast, Ben.
Thank you, David.
Today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on April 26th, 2012. In the print edition, it's called The Stand-Up Guy, and in the online version, it's called The Man Who Wasn't Afraid of the Mayor. And this is a tribute to a guy named Bill Lavica.
The great Bill Lavica, who really earns the name The Great Bill Lavica.
And he restored old buildings, and whom you say fought powerful mayors in the city of Chicago.
Well, really, I probably should have just made it singular. I think he didn't start fighting mayors until Mayor Richard M. Daley was elected.
But you don't identify any fights with City Hall that he won. Are you aware of any?
Unfortunately, I can't think of any right now. The big fights that he had, he lost. He did win a fight with the state, the Illinois Medical Commission. In fact, that was an ironic twist of fate. But in that fight, Mayor Daley joined with him. It was over a vacant lot, which Bill had converted into a baseball field, beautiful baseball field, where a Little League team from that area was.
I remember this, and they gave it to the team to play on temporarily.
Yeah, and then they tried to yank it from them, of course, you know, because there's no other vacant lots on the west side to choose from. And I wrote several articles about that, so I believe that was a victory, but that was an irony because he was joined by Mayor Daley in that victory. Most of the great preservation battles of the last 20 years have been unsuccessful in terms of the preservationists, as the buildings were destroyed.
So go our old buildings in Chicago. At the beginning of your article, you talk about the fact that the city council caved on the mayor's proposed infrastructure
yes,
trust. You knew I was going to go there,
yeah.
Which the city council passed 41-7. Last time we talked, we talked about the previous finance committee vote on the infrastructure trust, and we talked about the aldermen who voted against it during that committee meeting. And I have a list here of the aldermen who voted no this week on the infrastructure trust in the full council vote. And four of them were the same as voted against it in the committee, namely Wagspack, Riley, Hairston, and Munoz. This time joining them were Arena, Fioretti, and Folks. People who voted for it but voted against it in the committee were Pat Dowell.
That is correct.
Surprised there?
No. Pat and Amaya Pawar co-authored a essay that ran, I believe, in the Chicago Tribune, don't quote me on that, in which they said, if the mayor does X, Y, and Z, we'll support this. And the mayor did X, Y, and Z. And I can't remember what X, Y, and Z were. I just know they were utterly frivolous and of no real substance. So the bar was pretty low.
So they held out for almost nothing.
Yeah, they held out for almost nothing. But I still love Pat Dowell nonetheless.
And who else voted against it? Bob Fioretti.
Yes. Bob has really come on as a force, as sort of an independent force, a voice of independence, mainly because he saw what going along got him. They completely redesigned his ward so that he effectively has no more ward. And so it just goes to show you that there's really no loyalty in Democratic politics in Chicago. Anyway, that freed him up to be a pretty good advocate for independent causes. And Rick Munoz, I'm happy to say, he actually had, in my humble opinion, the most on-target critique of it, which was there's really no need to have an infrastructure fund. We could just vote on these deals deal by deal. Why are we creating this new entity? And of course, the answer is that, well, the mayor has not given a satisfactory answer, so we're just left to presume and make presumptions.
Let's do that.
Let's presume.
I've got some ideas about that I want to run by you.
Go ahead. What are your ideas? Yeah.
The conventional way of doing this sort of stuff is with municipal bonds.
That's
and
right.
There are a couple different kinds of bonds. There are bonds that can be paid back to the investors by virtue of, say, taxes, which, you know, the mayor's administration has says they're, you know, they're loath to do. We can't go tax the people anymore.
Yeah.
But there are also revenue bonds, which would work just like, you know, the infrastructure trust is planned to work. In other words, there can be some profit from the investment that they're making, whatever it is. And that's the same way that they're talking about for the infrastructure trust. So given that, and then given the fact that Chicago's bond rating is not that bad, it's only slightly worse than Boston's, which has got the highest rating from Moody's, which does the
ratings.
So why really does the mayor want to use this unconventional method? And my question is, well, then who's benefiting? Maybe we get a clue from the press release that came out in March announcing the Infrastructure Trust, where the mayor announced the five early adopters, if you will.
They were there early.
Yeah. And it's Citibank and another part of a Citigroup called City Infrastructure Investors, an outfit called Macquarie Infrastructure and Real Assets.
Yeah, that's the one, the outfit that financed the
Skyway. J.P. Morgan Asset Management, an investment group, and Ulilco Investment Company, a union-based insurance company. And we can look at things like the fact that Macquarie was already in on an infrastructure deal, which arguably they made pretty well on. So bring it on, they're saying, probably. Citigroup also was involved in that group in that they helped refinance the investor's original investment in the Chicago Skyway. So they were also at the trough. And they recently involved in something that Bloomberg News calls the recent transfer of Indianapolis's water and sewer system to a trust similar to Chicago's. So they're chomping at the bit. And then if we look at J.P. Morgan, J.P. Morgan Chase PAC has contributed thousands of dollars, over $10,000, to Rahm Emanuel's political fund while he was either running for or in Congress. So that kind of explains what they're doing at the table.
Well, Dave, you hit it on the head. I mean, this is the opportunity for big profits for these companies. I almost laugh when I say these things, but the mayor and the city council are supposed to be looking out for the financial interests of the taxpayers, of the residents of the city of Chicago. They're not supposed to be looking out for the interests of Citibank or J.P. Morgan or any of these other consortiums or conglomerates or whatever they are. So clearly the first question is, well, why and how did these five get to the front of the line? Usually there's a bidding process where if you want to bid on city business, you have to come in with the lowest bid or the best bid for the city. But all of a sudden, this fund was announced with five people at the starting gate who'd already signed on, so to speak. I mean, not formally signed on or legally signed on, but they had letters of support. So already there's a question there. We asked that question, Mick and I did, when we did the first story, and we never got any response from the city.
Yes, what process was used for them to be the initial partners?
Yes, what process, exactly. And we FOIA'd for any kind of formal bidding process or letter that went out. We still haven't received the results. Maybe there are no results. It's very interesting. We pointed out in one of our articles that the letters that these five companies wrote of support for the fund are very similar in language, as though...
Boilerplate.
Yes. Clearly, we diverted from the usual process, that process that's intended to protect the interests of the taxpayers and the citizens of Chicago. And of course, there's going to be an obvious potential benefit for Rahm, Mayor Rahm, because now if these companies are feeding from the trough, then they'll be more than happy to contribute to his campaigns, whatever campaigns they are.
King.
King, yes. He's running for king.
Just kidding.
Yeah. So this is just a bad deal in every sense of the way. It's never been clearly explained. It is very craftily promoted as though somehow or other we are going to be able to borrow money without, in fact, having to pay it back. In some ways, as a PR move, it reminds me of the way TIFs have been sold to the public all these years. This is a magical pool of money that costs you nothing, and it's just created by the financial wizardry of our great leaders.
It's magic.
It's magic, yeah. So I'm really disappointed with the city council. I don't know even why I should say I'm disappointed.
Is there anyone in particular, as you look across the rogues gallery, is there anyone in particular that you're disappointed in?
Oh, well, my own alderman, Amaya Pouar. I mean, he campaigned to be a voice against this very kind of trickery.
And he turned quickly.
One of the fastest turns I've ever seen. Very nimble.
Maybe he's a skateboarder.
Yeah, a skateboarder. And, you know, earlier we were talking about Joe Moore, the alderman of the 49th Ward, who's always been, or early on in his career, but was a voice against this kind of maneuverings, and he was very strong in favor of it. I tend to give Joe a lot of slack because, one, I like him on a personal level, but two, he's been at it for so long, he's probably just tired of fighting these guys.
From all appearances, he was a cheerleader in the city council session.
Was a cheerleader, and so was Amaya, and those are two. Will Burns, the 4th Ward, he's Tony Preckwinkle's successor in the city council, very disappointed in his vote. There's really no reason for him to vote for it. I almost guarantee his reform-minded constituents in Kenwood and Hyde Park would be against essentially just allowing the mayor even more control than he already has, as if he doesn't have enough as it is. So I'm disappointed in him joining the usual suspects.
Well, now we're looking forward to seeing what deals come about and how the city council deals with them.
That's the interesting thing. Now, they've set up this entity, this fund, which will have the capability of putting these deals together. In many cases, the city council will still have to vote on the deal. So again, why are we even creating this thing if the city council still has to vote on them? My understanding is that if this fund comes up with financing schemes for schools or parks or public transportation, the city council will not have to vote on them.
Because they're not city departments. They're sister agencies.
Unless, and here it gets really complicated, unless there's intergovernmental agreements. For instance, if we are using revenue that would otherwise go to the city and diverting it to pay for schools, let's say. For instance, they're going to install these speed cameras near schools, which will automatically track folks who are going over, 30 miles an hour, and then shoot them a ticket.
Looking to run down students.
Yes, right. Without getting into the pros and cons of those speed cameras, that money would ordinarily go to the city. So if they decide, well, we're going to take that money and divert it to build schools, I presume some sort of intergovernmental agreement will have to be signed and voted on by the city council. But again, I'm no lawyer.
Well, we have talked in the past about how the building of schools does get funded. Sometimes it comes out of the CPS budget, but often it doesn't.
Yes, a lot of the school funding comes from the TIF program. There was a Modern Schools Across Chicago, I believe it was called, bonding deal that was to a great extent financed by TIFs, and the city council voted on that. And there were aldermen who were upset, as I recall, because some of the TIF dollars were coming out of what they considered their kitties to be spent for pet projects in their ward, and they didn't want to have to spend that money building a new school, which was an interesting spin on the whole TIF.
You can't take the candy away once you gave it to them.
No, you can't take, it's our money. Yeah, this is just the first card. Now, there's also a part of me that thinks nothing will come out of this other than maybe one or two retrofittings. They've thrown out there that they're going to retrofit certain buildings in the city and then use the savings on utility costs to pay back the loans. I don't know, maybe this could be one of those instances where Rahm was just looking for a PR stunt to get some publicity. It kind of backfired since pretty much everybody in Chicago was against it. So maybe he won't do anything.
That's an interesting idea, given the fact that these five heavy hitters
are already lined up. Yeah, that's a long shot. I think if I'm laying bets in Vegas, doing nothing is the long shot. But,
you're showing your rare streak of optimism there.
No, don't do anything.
On that optimistic note, Ben Jarowski of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Dave.
If you'd like to hear more of my interviews with Ben, go to MrRadio.org, where you'll find instructions to subscribe to our podcast so you won't miss a single interview. Or you can search on iTunes for Ben Jarowski or for me, Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.